TV. 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 Okay, TV.
You love it now, don't you? You've grown resigned to it, haven't you?
That's a start.
I'll take it.
I've grown resigned to... apparently, people find it delightful.
They like, do.
I mean, if they don't find it delightful, they're not telling us.
Look, you're the one...
The ones who don't are silent on the matter. We've had many emails and comments from people who super love it.
You came up with the whole cassette ka-chunk thing back in the day, which was our lo-fi solution. And so now this is my lo-fi solution to a problem.
Yes, it's a problem.
Fixed, thanks to me.
Sure. You fixed it.
I did.
This is LKTV.
A podcast perhaps, of the television.
Perhaps you've heard our voices before on a different podcast. Words. A different podcast called Linoleum Knife.
Yes. That one.
That's not what this is.
That one over there is a podcast of the cinema. This one over here.
That podcast over there.
Mm-hmm.
The teapot.
That. Oh, don't start. This is a podcast of the television.
I just explained to Alonzo what a thought was, a THOT. It is a...
Go to Urban Dictionary.
It's a misogynist term.
Terrible term.
And I explained it to Alonzo off the mic before we began recording. And now he's using it all the time.
You told me it 5 minutes ago, and I haven't said it yet.
You've really got a problem now with the way you overuse, the way you use it at all.
Why must you lie all the time?
It's
about everything.
You've become problematic.
Now I know you're full of it because you hate that word.
With your use of this sort of language.
I think you need to give me a trigger warning before you say problematic. That's what I think.
On Linoleum Knife, we watch a bunch of movies and we tell you things about them because we're film critics.
Correct.
You are a film critic for What the Flick.
Yes, and I'm also the film reviews editor for The Wrap, and my name is Alonzo Durante.
Yes, I am Dave White. I am not a film critic, really.
No.
I mean, not, sorry.
Currently.
I'm not a TV critic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm a film critic who's taken a tiny little break from writing film reviews to write other things.
Even though there's been a clamoring for you to return,
I know.
The form.
That's going to happen. Yeah. But I haven't written about TV in about 5 years.
Mm.
Yeah, those gigs dried up,
and sadly,
they didn't come back.
Sadly, the internet being the internet, you know, I have that time hop app on my phone, where it shows me what I posted on.
Yeah.
Facebook is up 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and I actually came across a thing that I posted of one of your TV recaps of something.
Yeah.
And, of course, not there anymore.
The link doesn't work.
The link doesn't
work
anymore.
Yeah, those links
anymore.
Are broken. They're gone.
Yeah, like websites don't catalog things as well as you'd think they would.
I was hired for many years, for a good 6 or 7 years, to recap reality television.
Yes.
Which, you know... I gotta say, is a lot of fun.
If the show
doesn't even have to be good.
True, that's
for
true.
Me to have fun doing it.
You're right.
Yeah.
No, it's shocking.
Doesn't happen anymore.
People talk
so
about
whatever.
People talk about how, you know, if there's ever an electromagnetic pulse, there will be no pictures because nobody prints their photographs anymore. They just have them on their phone or in their computer.
Right.
But if you're a freelance writer, it's quite possible that things that you worked hard on are just not there anymore because websites dry up, and you know, like for example, you and I spent the better part of a couple of years working for an AOL site that they up and sold the content. They flushed the content. They sold the
Right.
name the to somebody else, and so it just automatically directs you to that page. And you know, Google caches some things,
Oh,
but
really?
not everything. I can't find everything that I've
Interesting.
written.
I don't remember a single thing I wrote for that site.
No.
Except for two interviews. We're talking about AOL, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I interviewed John Waters for that
two
site.
Interviews
It's gone.
that I did. I interviewed our pal Kevin when he got his third Tony nomination.
Right.
And then I interviewed the fashion designers, Costello Taglia Pietra, who are also gentlemen we know.
Yes.
Who are really great. And if you go into Kiehl's, actually, this
they own it this year.
Christmas, they have designed everything in Kiehl's.
Yeah,
this year.
All the sort of these custom holiday packaging and all their mailers and stuff. You know, it's all Costello Taglia Pietra this year.
Hey, guess what?
What?
We don't have any advertisers
for this show. No,
for
we don't.
This show, but we do have a former film critic friend. He's a current friend.
That's true.
He's a current friend, former film critic,
right?
Who has a business now.
Sure.
And I was just talking to him about it today, and I said, you know what we ought to do? We ought to talk you up on both the shows, just because.
That sounds like a great idea.
Just to leg you up.
And don't come thinking now that because we're doing it for this
person. This is our personal friend.
That, you know.
So everyone calm down.
Yeah, we don't start lining up for the freebies.
But
we're not running a charity here.
Right. But this friend, James Rocky,
Who's been on the other show.
Been a guest on Linoleum Knife back when he was a film critic. He's now a baker.
Yeah.
So he's doing something very, very close to my heart. He has a business now called Hello Blondie. And he makes blondies.
Yes.
And they are really, really delicious blondies. I've eaten them.
He even makes gluten-free blondies.
Yeah.
And there's some other kind too, right? Some other variants.
Vegan.
Vegan blondies, yes.
Yeah. Vegan and gluten-free and normal. And he has...
Miraculously all delicious.
His website is called Hello Blondie, B-L-O-N-D-I-E. Mm-hmm. Like the comic strip, like the band.
Yes.
HelloBlondieSweets.com. You go there.
So that's like two sexist terms in a row.
What?
Hello Blondie Sweets.
Okay.
It's a joke.
Just
it's
because you've learned the word thought and you're using it now all the time.
All the time.
Doesn't mean you have to go hog wild.
No.
All right. No, HelloBlondieSweets.com. If and you go there and buy some blondies.
Yes.
And you enter the code word... Linoleum.
Oh, this is the thing.
This is the thing. He just came out. I was just talking to him on Facebook this morning. He goes, if your listeners put the word linoleum in, they get 20% off.
Wow.
The
blondies. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's amazing.
You want these. They're super delicious.
All right.
Yeah, we just, I mean, free ad. I believe in the product. That's really...
we love the product, and frankly, anything that can help a former film critic land on his feet in a new business, we're all about.
Yes.
So
indeed,
go get you some holiday tasty yummies.
Other business to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
An anonymous person keeps sending us presents, and I don't know who it is. It's freaking me out. I mean, I'm not freaking out because...
Not in a bad way.
Not in a bad way. I obviously, who doesn't love presents?
Yes.
But it's a listener because the note always says, Merry Christmas or Happy Birthday or whatever from the listeners of Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
So like...
One person
is
collectively
sending
making
us gifts
all of you
on
very
behalf
jealous.
Of all of you. Yeah. A couple books came in the mail this week and...
If it's the person who's been made these gifts previously, then we do know who it is.
But we don't know who it is because there's
not,
no name. There's no name.
Yes.
On it. And I mean, at the end of the summer, somebody sent us a box fan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was the other mystery thing. Yeah, but with no name.
That had
it.
No note at all. That was not like even a.
From the listeners.
From the listeners.
It just showed up.
Yeah. I don't know who you are. Obviously. Thank you.
Yes. We're very grateful.
But here's what I'm going to say.
And appreciative.
We are minutes away from starting our subscription service.
So save the action.
Save your money for subscribing to upcoming extra content and stuff and treats that will be rolling out.
Yes.
Soon and very soon.
Several people took advantage of our Cyber Monday deal.
Oh yeah.
Of the multiple episodes of our extra multiple the entire set of our extra episodes.
Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Yes. Right. The 10 DVD commentaries that we've recorded for movies.
And that's over now, so you can't do that anymore.
But we'll have Die Hard
The extra episodes are also going to be part of one of the subscription packages.
Yes.
Yeah. Which will be, you know, not expensive.
Right.
That's my favorite thing about this subscription thing that we're about to roll out. There's some really cheap, cheap, cheap levels.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm, you know, that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
And I like making, like, the way I put my audiobook for Exile in Guyville up on the internet for whatever you want to pay for it.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of how this is. I'm feeling really nice about this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're journalists, so we know this firsthand, but everybody's poor.
Right. We're all working more hours and making less money.
Poor. We too. And
we, the 99.9%, are being screwed over.
And so you shouldn't have to pay a lot of money for things. You should pay cheap amounts of money for things.
On the other hand,
if you got some money,
sure,
we're going to have some levels of subscription.
Also, we're creating content here, and we deserve something. We're not out to gouge you.
I deserve one of those blondies. Two.
and a glass of milk.
Two blondies and a glass of milk or a nice cup of tea.
Yes. Yeah. Or some cocoa.
Or some cocoa. Television shows.
Yes, this program, in fact, will be one of the perks of subscription.
Actually,
subscriberhood.
Yeah, the lowest level of subscription.
Yes, yes. Everybody gets this. Yeah. Once you're a subscriber, this is the very least we can do for you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I watched another episode of Manimal.
Oh, tell me, because I have not gotten to
this episode is so convoluted.
Remind people
what is a Manimal?
A Manimal is a show that aired in 1983 for 8 episodes on NBC before being canceled. And the premise is that there's this British dude who has the power to turn himself into
Jonathan,
played by Simon McCorkindale,
the late Simon McCorkindale.
In the pilot, we see him turn into a Black Panther and a hawk and a kitty cat. I don't know if there's other Manimals that turn up over the course of the series.
I'm fixing to find out because I'm watching all 8 run of the series.
And he's got crackling romantic chemistry with Melody Anderson.
He has skeevy romantic chemistry.
Yes, it is creepy.
Every woman
he's a creeper, but mainly with Melody Anderson, who is the blonde cop on the show.
So here's the funny thing.
She is Kristen Wiig in the MacGruber sketches. She's that much of a sort of archetypal, like, you know, television decided, oh, we're all feminist now. We're going to give you this, like, this police lady with a, what was it that my sister-in-law said? Oh, and I pointed out her perm and she said, oh, double process.
Yeah. Last week over Thanksgiving in Atlanta, we made many Duraldes sit and watch the Manimal pilot with us.
So you got into episode 2.
I got into episode 2. And here's what happens. It's called Illusion.
Small town gay bar.
Harris of the Illusionary Animal Act, Harris and Ross. And here's the great thing. On their theater sign,
mm-hmm.
it says, Harris and Ross, Magic illusions.
So are they like the waspy Siegfried and Roy?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Harris is murdered during their act at a New York theater. The murder takes place while Brooke and Jonathan, as volunteers in the magic act, are assisting the two performers on stage. So Jonathan is useless unless he's the manimal.
Right.
Unless he has actually turned himself into a hawk or a panther or a fluffy kitty, he cannot save a murder that is taking place 3 feet away from him.
Literally in front of him.
Yeah.
Thanks for nothing, manimal.
I'm reading from the accompanying booklet of the plot synopsis, which goes on and on.
The entire series on two discs or whatever was recently released by Shout Factory.
So I'm not going to read this. But what happens is,
okay. So Siegfried is mauled by a tiger, and then
there's a Bulgarian diplomat
always.
Who is in on this animal smuggling ring, and that's what he was doing with the magic guys.
Were the magic guys in on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were accomplices.
But they were just, you know, they're just kind of like his victims, I see. Really. And so they, he used them. And so they have to go after the guys. Uh-huh. But then it turns out guys who are working with the magicians, they're involved in it too, and... At one point, Jonathan turns into the hawk, but he gets caught in a boy's butterfly net. That's really the best part.
So wait, now if he turns back into the man while he's in a butterfly net, will he like get, you know, crushed to death or whatever? Like if he's, you know, changes size?
I suppose that as the hawk, someone could shoot him.
Yes, or put him in a small container.
Or put him in a cage or whatever and trap him there forever.
Mm.
I wonder if that happens in episode 3.
I don't know. Look, this is a show where like the tuxedo rips away and it's magically restored.
I'm pretty excited to watch episode 3. This is a terrible show.
What more did you learn about the manimal in episode
Nothing.
2?
Really? Not no. one thing, except that William, who played Cannon?
Oh, I knew until you asked. Conrad.
William Conrad spends the first 3 minutes of the episode narrating.
Oh, right, yeah. Apparently
explaining.
I saw on the Wikipedia
Manimal.
Page, every episode after the pilot.
The blah, blah, blah.
William Conrad. He tells you who Manimal is.
Nature's darkest secrets and mysteries.
Tells you what is a Manimal.
Tells you all about the Manimal and who he is and where he came from in Vietnam and his father, who was also a Manimal. And
right.
Blah, blah, blah. Together with his trusty, blonde, curly-haired, you know, detective lady.
And Glenn Turman.
Yeah. And the other guy, they fight the crime in the urban jungle.
Mm.
Get it? Because that's where the Manimal lives.
Have they made Glenn Turman...
I'm super into this show.
Have they made Glenn Turman do anything, like, ridiculously funky yet?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's actual racism going on.
Oh, good.
In the show. It's that kind where the black actor is sort of gritting his teeth through it all.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, well, they're paying me. And I want to keep working.
Has the phrase jive turkey been uttered yet?
Does
Manimal turn into a jive turkey?
No.
Maybe the Thanksgiving episode.
If that happened, I had dozed off or something.
I see, okay.
So here's a funny thing.
I'm just imagining Manimal going,
here's a funny thing. You posted one of the first episode where we watched this on our, I guess it was the Linoleum Knife Facebook page.
And on Instagram.
And on Instagram. And someone who apparently doesn't know us, and who, I guess one of his friends must have commented on it, and then it wound up on his wall or something.
Hold that thought, please.
What's
that? Sorry, delivery guy.
I'm sure I was cut off in mid. What's going on?
Yeah, I think you were. Anyway, stranger commented on our Manimal thing.
Saying, I think just by seeing that we had put the Manimal thing in the post, he said, why don't they just watch Mystery Science Theater? I was like, well, okay, sure. Mystery Science Theater used Manimal as a joke, as did
a lot of people.
Many people.
I think Letterman had a whole running Manimal thing, too.
But we are here to watch every episode of Manimal
for you. Somebody commented, all I remember...
In a serious way.
Somebody commented, all I remember is bubbling hand. Which is the thing on this show. That is
the
thing.
The special effects of him manimalizing...
Are pretty terrible.
Are pretty amazing.
By which I mean amazing.
That's exactly what you mean. In conclusion...
And mind you...
To be continued.
And we've talked about this before. This, like,
Manimal is wonderful.
American Werewolf in London had already come out. So
right.
The bar had been raised, but not on network television.
Right.
So no new Manimals on this episode.
Just no.
Black Cat and Hawk, that's
yeah.
it. Black Panther.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we both watched The Wiz live.
Yes.
And they
have talked about changing the game, because I think after the first two, after the Sound of Music live and Peter
yes.
Pan live, it seemed like the annual design was going to be, let's come up with some really horrible piece of musical theater.
Someone's not going to get it.
Oh, man, we're
Woo-hoo.
Popular today. Okay.
We're very popular.
So popular today.
With the locals.
Anyway, the Sound of Music and Peter Pan, the premise seemed to be, let's come up with a really, like, awkwardly straightforward and kind of inept piece of musical theater
yeah.
that, you know, small children and the undiscerning will love, and that gay men on Twitter will eviscerate
right.
in various time zones.
Yeah.
And then apparently this year they decided, oh, wait, what if we made one that didn't suck?
Yeah.
And they did.
They did. People still hate watched it, though. I noticed on the internet that this was... I think that once you established a two-in-a-row pattern...
Yeah, it's hard to...
It's hard to convince people that the next one isn't going to be immediately...
This will be different.
...the subject of mockery.
Sure.
Furthermore, I think that there's always going to be... Now, in this moment in history, there's always going to be a person out there who can't watch anything anymore without...
The claws coming out.
Without the claws coming out. And I don't just mean gay men, although they are guilty.
I was going to say.
They are guiltier than the rest of the population.
Sure.
Our people. This form also may contribute to that.
The musical form, or
no? This particular presentation, by being live and shot digitally, and on stage, where everything is highly artificial.
Sure,
I think when people watch television now, they're used to the
sets and
they're used to the close approximation
of cinema
to reality and to cinema.
Yeah,
these specials are neither.
No, these harken back to original television.
Yeah, and it's interesting that NBC uses their vintage logo.
Oh, do they?
Thing that morphs into the new one.
Oh, the old peacock.
Yeah,
interesting.
They start the new peacock. They start it with the old one, and then they go through like five of them.
And it
becomes the new one. But this is a really old-timey television situation where, you know, oh, we've got a play and it's going to be on TV.
Live.
And you're going to watch it like that.
Yeah.
This one turned out to be good. If you're down for that kind of thing.
Sure. I mean, if you weren't into musicals at all, you could pick it apart anyway.
I was, frankly, only into the singing.
Well, it's the Wizard of Oz. It's not like there's anything new that you're going to glean from that
Correct.
Story. It is such a, you know, my problem with the one Lord of the Rings movie I saw, which was the whole thing is, and then they went, and then they went, and then they went.
Right.
I mean, the Wizard of Oz is nothing but sort of quest narrative or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
But I thought
the singing was good.
Shanice, what's her name? Williams?
I think.
Is that her last name?
I don't remember. She was good.
She can sing.
And to have to be Dorothy in front of Stephanie Mills.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Well, not just in front of Stephanie Mills. in front of Neo and Common.
No,
and
but in front of Stephanie Mills, who originated that role.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I know 40 million people are watching at home, and I'm also sharing a stage with, like, Mary J. Blige
Queen Latifah
and all these people.
Yeah.
But Stephanie Mills would be the one I'd be most nervous about if I were her. And she pulled it off.
Yeah.
We've not heard the last of her, I think.
I don't think.
I would hope
so.
Not.
I particularly enjoyed Amber Riley.
Yes.
The unsung hero of Glee.
Yes, and this is exactly the context for her, because she is... I mean, I don't know her solo work. I know she's probably... I think she's put an album or two out, and I haven't heard them.
Yeah.
But from what I have gleaned from Glee... She is a stage actress, and she will, you know, she's a belter, and she's, you know, that's her wheelhouse. And so doing this kind of show is right, you know, is her comfort zone.
She may be the closest thing I've seen to Jennifer Holliday in, well, ever.
Since you know. Jennifer Holliday.
Yeah. There's just this power in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's, you know, Mary J. Blige.
Yes, and Uzo Adiba.
Yeah, but I'm specifically talking about Mary J. Blige.
Okay.
Who is one of the best people on the planet. I don't know if y'all know this or not. But you should understand that your life will be better with more Mary J. Blige.
You might be overselling this attack.
In it. No, I'm not. No. No. You need Mary J. Blige in your life. A lot. You need a lot of her. The Wiz Live gives you a little bit of her.
Well, yeah.
She delivers.
Sure.
She single-handedly, along with Tom Cruise's weird performance, saved Rock of Ages for me, which is a bad movie.
I felt bad for her in that movie because...
I did, too. I know what you're going to say, too.
Yeah.
We talked about it on the Linoleum.
Yeah, life. Because the rest of that movie is designed to accommodate non-singers.
Or people who aren't as good as she is, a.k.a. the entire rest of the cast.
No, but it's not even that. It's not like it's a cast of singers and she's so great. It's a cast of non-singers.
Mostly, yes.
For the most part.
Yeah.
And so then they kind of swamp her in the same sort of orchestrations and whatnot. And
they bury her voice.
Yeah.
In the mix. If she's singing with other people.
Right.
If she has to sing in Rock of Ages, if she has to sing with anyone else, they mix her at the level of those other people and the music so that you have to actually listen to sort out her voice.
Yeah.
If she's singing solo, then she's making you forget that you're watching Rock of Ages.
But even when she's singing solo, they're still like, they've amped up the instrumentation. Basically, they could have cast Alfre Woodard in that part because they would have handled her vocals the same way.
Yes.
You know.
Does Alfre Woodard sing?
I don't, not that I know Maybe. Of. I'm not familiar with it if she does. She's never done so professionally that I know of.
That's the burden of being Mary J. Blige. You make everyone else look
well,
terrible,
right. Okay.
Just by walking into the room.
But then, for example, you look at her in a movie like I Can Do Battle by Myself, where the only people who sing in that movie are her and Gladys Knight.
Right.
And they're both given free rein
yes,
to do it up and be themselves.
Right.
And The Wiz also gives her that.
Although
that
we can thank Tyler Perry for that.
Well, exactly.
You get a bad movie starring Taraji P. Henson.
Right.
Who's acting the hell out of this bad movie.
Uh-huh.
And then Mary J. Blige comes in and sings.
Yes.
And then Gladys Knight comes in and sings.
Right.
And when it's over, you're like, okay, those three things...
Made this garbage-y.
Made this less super terrible.
I'm so, so happy that Empire came along. Because Taraji P. Henson in... I Can Do Battle by Myself. It's like when
that was her audition for Cookie Lion.
Pretty much,
by the way.
Yeah. But it just drives me crazy when you see like Alfre Woodard or Kathy Bates or why am I blanking on her name now? The star of How to Get Away with Murder, the great
Roxanne Murder.
Yes, no, the actress.
Violet Davis.
Violet Davis, thank you. Viola.
Viola Davis.
Violet.
I know it. We know a young child named Violet.
We do. Yes. Different one. Anyway, it would drive me nuts to see them in Tyler Perry movies because I would just think, this is what you're getting offered.
Right.
If you were getting offered something better than a Tyler Perry movie, you would not be in a Tyler Perry movie.
Correct.
You know, and it's your Hollywood sexism right there. I mean, you don't have to even look at the number of, like, how few movies get directed by women or produced by women or written by women. The fact that these powerhouse actresses have to settle for working for, you know, Tyler Perry or now Ryan Murphy on television.
Yes.
You know, it just drives me crazy.
You know, thanks to those guys because
they're writing
people.
Them. Yes, they're giving them roles.
They love female actors.
Sure. No.
And they do. They give them work. It's just not great work.
Yeah, exactly.
For them. Yeah.
So anyway, that's just a personal peeve. I thought, yes, you're right. Evelyn is not a huge role in The Wiz, but she gets one big standout number. And Mary J. Blige just makes every second of that number count.
The costumes are great. The choreography is cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's voguing at the Emerald City. That was great.
The new song was good.
One White Guy? What is that about? Like, I'm watching it, like, wait a second. Is that a white guy? What's a white guy doing in there? And then, again, later in the show, you see him. He's in the back. He's in the way back. You're like, it's that white guy.
You could be making assumptions.
Why is there a white guy back
You could
there?
Be. We know people who are African-American who, you know, maybe visually read as Caucasian.
That is correct. You're right. However, this guy was basically blonde.
Maybe it was a wig.
Possibly. There's a white guy in The Wiz Live.
Look,
why is he there?
If we're gonna mock the handful of people on Twitter who somehow managed to get news coverage by complaining that The Wiz was all black and that was somehow racist, we can't also complain that if The Wiz
I'm
had
not
one
complaining.
White
I'm
guy,
just I'm just don't understand. they ran out of black people.
I don't think
to
that
put
was
in
a
the cast.
That
to
was
put
not,
in the chorus.
No.
It's just a chorus. It's just a chorus, dude.
Yes.
They ran out of black people for the chorus. They're like, oh, okay,
fine.
We have to have this white guy in the chorus.
You can be in it.
He's grinning in the back. He's so happy to be there. Look, everybody, I'm in The Wiz Live.
You don't know his story.
I don't know
you
his
don't
story.
Know his journey.
I need to know his story. I'm not mad at him. I'm not upset that they did it.
You're just curious.
I'm just confused. I need answers.
I saw The Wiz on stage in Atlanta. My parents, who did not take me to a ton of musical theater, I guess since this one seemed like it was particularly kid-friendly or something.
Wizard of Oz.
They took me to see it when I was like 9 or 10 years old.
Was this just the touring company?
Just the touring company, yeah. It was, I don't think so.
Did they take you to see Chicago, too?
They did. But that was
how old were you for that?
Not like 9. I think it was pretty good. And we just all went. And that was really random. I don't know why we went to that one. I remember digging it, though. But yeah, I saw The Wiz.
And then we wound up at this community theater production of The Boys in the Band when I was 10.
Marat Saad, no. The seeing The Wiz on stage was great. And then there was that movie, which is...
It's a bad movie.
It's a bad movie, but there are things in it that are
Michael
cool.
Jackson's in it.
Michael Jackson in it, Nipsey Russell.
Michael Jackson is the best scarecrow.
Sure. Yeah. You said that when poor Neo was doing, you know, and was doing
Neo's
just fine.
Neo's fine.
And you cite Michael Jackson. I'm like, well, of course Michael Jackson's the best scarecrow. And then at the end when Uzo Odiwa comes out and I said, Lena Horne, you were like, yes. yes, obviously no one's ever going to be as good as Michael Jackson and Lena Horne at most things.
Right.
But the ones they got were fine. They were good.
Right. That is your 50th Christmas Charlie Brown show.
Oh wait, one last thing about The Wiz. Right. I just want to give a shout out to our friend Douglas Graves.
The
sound engineer on your audiobook.
My sound dude for the Exile in Guyville audiobook
worked on this show.
Yeah,
and Queen Latifah patted his beard.
She touched his beard
at the after party. And that's a woman who knows beards. Ba-doom!
Oh, nice one.
Thank you.
Nice one. Pretty clever there.
Yeah, I thought so. All right.
Kids, that was a joke about a closet.
Which apparently there were actually quite a few references to that in The Wiz.
Harvey Fierstein wrote it.
Oh, really? He wrote this version?
He wrote this updated screenplay. This updated book. Book. They called it the book.
Yes.
Theater people.
I did not know Harvey Fierstein wrote it at all. Book. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Charlie Brown's 50th.
Not good.
Yeah.
It is boring.
Well, here's the thing. It had the stuff in it that I would want from a 50th anniversary special.
Right.
In terms of the historical context.
What's the name of the special? It's your 50th Christmas Charlie Brown.
Yeah. So, you know, they talked about that, you know, a lot of stuff that we talked about during the Snoopy Come Home commentary, the never aired, you know, documentary that was made for television.
That's what I want to see. How do I see that?
It never aired. So I don't know. They showed a clip from it, but I don't know.
But I want the whole thing.
I don't know. We should maybe see if the Paley has it or something. But, you know, they talked to some of the surviving cast members and singers from the thing. You know, they had vintage clips of, like, Bill Melendez talking about stuff. All that I thought was great.
I ruined Gary Cotti's day.
Oh, don't ruin everybody else's day. I know what you're going to do. Are you going to tell this story now?
I'm not going to tell the story. I'll tell you this, though.
Okay.
If you want to be incredibly bummed out, and who doesn't?
At Christmas time.
Go look up what happened to Peter Robbins.
The voice of Charlie Brown on the original Christmas special.
Yeah, and in several specials in one or two of the films.
Do yourself a favor. Don't. Or don't do it after the holidays.
In January. It's very, very sad. Well, while we were putting the lights on the tree yesterday, I was like, "Oh, hey, guess what happened?
You're terrible."
And I didn't think much about it, you know, because and when I finished telling him, he's like, "You've ruined my entire day."
That's how you thank him for helping us pick up the
tree.
God, Dave White.
I bought him a donut and coffee.
Oh, well, that makes up for it, then, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, that aside. So I liked the historical content of the special. I that's what I would have wanted to see in a special. And if you're going to then... The idea is to then mix that stuff with contemporary artists doing music from the special.
Yeah.
On paper, not a terrible idea. But then there's two things you have to do. One, get the right musicians. And two, have a producer or a writer or whatever, the special, who knows how to incorporate these different elements in a way that is smooth and where the transitions make sense. Those things did not happen. the writing was all over the place where, you know, Kristen Bell, who hosted, would start talking about something and then suddenly, and now here's David Benoit to play Linus and Lucy. So that was weird. And then there were these clips from, I don't know, maybe like later Peanuts specials that were looked and sounded terrible with really dumb songs. You had... I thought the Boys to Men part where it was okay. They worked in Little Birdie even, which isn't from Charlie Brown Christmas, but whatever. Right. I was genuinely moved by Kristen Chenoweth singing Happiness from You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. But why is Matthew Morrison singing a random song about Christmas trees in the middle of things?
Does he have a Christmas album to plug?
I suspect he does.
Yeah.
I haven't looked. Not interested. But that's my, I think so.
He's no Amber Riley.
No, he is not. And, you know, the David Benoit thing was okay, but kind of, I don't like hearing, it's funny. I mean, you know, I have 3,000 Christmas songs in my iTunes.
You do.
I have, you know, more versions of like Carol of the Bells or, you know, Santa Claus is Coming to Town that you can shake a stick at.
It's true.
But I only want to hear the original versions of the Vince Guaraldi compositions.
Well, yeah. Why would you? I mean, what was the point?
Of the instrumentals, anyway. Like, if somebody else wants to sing Christmas Time Is Here,
fine.
Sure. But yeah, if I want to hear Linus and Lucy or Snowfall or any of that stuff, I just want to hear the real thing.
What could you add?
Yeah, exactly.
No matter who you are, what are you going to add to that?
Even if you are Wynton Marsalis, who has put out a record of this stuff.
Right.
Don't want it.
Yeah.
So, the special had its heart in the right place, but it was a mess, I thought. And you know, if they're ever going to show it again, it could use some editing and reassembly to at least just kind of smooth out the transitions in and out of the music. And I would have liked more of the historical stuff, but I'm a nerd. That's, you know. We just went to the Charles Schulz Museum, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, we did.
So that's right up our alley.
That was really good.
It was great.
It was a wonderful day.
If you're ever in the Santa Rosa area in Northern California,
yes,
we highly recommend that you visit the Charles Schulz Museum.
Okay, so while you were out watching the Moby Dick movie, what's that Moby Dick movie?
In the Heart of the Sea.
Yeah. I was home watching The Great Holiday Baking Show.
Yes, which I it's still on TiVo. I'm going to totally watch that.
Now, let's backtrack.
Yes.
There is a show called The Great British Bake Off.
Right, that's what it's called in the UK.
And that's what it's called over there. And
Pillsbury apparently owns the name Bake Off in the US.
People began
emailing us,
urging me particularly to watch it. And I began watching it, and now I'm addicted to it.
It airs on BBC America as The Great British Baking Show?
No.
Sorry.
It's on PBS.
PBS, sorry.
As The Great British Baking Show.
That's what I just said.
And now ABC
right
has done a special, only for December, like four episodes.
Four episodes, yeah.
Called The Great Holiday Baking Show.
Right.
Here's what's different about it. Apparently, they shoot it in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
but in the same kind of like, how a location scout found a field that looks exactly like the ones I've seen
in England.
In England.
Like a cricket pitch?
I swear there is a digital, like, Downton Abbey in the background. Because everything I've read says they made it in Georgia. Uh-huh. Like, my first thought was, oh, they shot this in England. Just like, there's the tent.
Mm.
They shot this in England. Just, you know, in July. Even though it's the Christmas episode.
Right.
It's sunny and green everywhere. But no, apparently in Georgia. The hosts are different. The American hosts are Nir Vardalos, your Twitter pal.
Yes.
And every time I say her name, I say your Twitter pal,
right.
Nir Vardalos. And
I'm waiting for them to get to the building of bread competition.
And that's going to be her. She's going to judge the bread building competition.
I did see the gingerbread house competition. And then there's the...
No, I'm just going to be like, oh, the other co-host is her husband, Ian Gomez.
Right.
Of Felicity.
Yes. And
also
and lots of other things.
And also that other show. Whatever
he was on Cougar Town.
Whatever else it is he's done.
He's been done lots of things.
Felicity.
He was on Cougar Town.
He was on Felicity.
Yes.
So, to me, and all that matters is Felicity.
How great is it, by the way, to know that when your wife turns your married life into now two movies,
yeah.
that you get to be played by John Corbis.
Pretty much.
Using your name.
Right. And so...
And then the chef guy, the dude in the black...
There's some other chef guy. I don't know who he is. He's new to me. Apparently he's a pastry chef.
Right. And?
But he's a judge.
Right.
And then the other judge, the one thing that they brought over from the English show is Mary Berry.
Yes.
And she's wonderful.
Yes.
And the TV critics in the United States are not happy with this, either because it doesn't do exactly what the British show is doing.
Or it's not enough like American shows?
Or it's not enough. Like, I don't really know what their beef is, but I've been reading grumblings out there on the internet. Oh, they failed. Guess what? They didn't fail. Tonally, it's still the same show. It's sweet. Everyone's nice. The contestants are nice to each other. I don't know what they win at the end. Maybe they win the engraved
cake stand.
Maybe they win the engraved cake stand. There's a guy on it that Gary and I were watching the show, Gary Cotty, whose day I ruined as we were decorating the tree. For new listeners, Gary Cotty is our neighbor and very good friend.
Yeah.
And he's over at this house a lot eating.
Well,
also doing things like helping going to get the Christmas tree and helping to set up the lights.
During one episode, he built the table that we're currently podcasting.
That is true.
On.
If you listen to Old Linoleum Knives, you heard him constructing the table, the IKEA table that we bought, that we're sitting at right now.
Yes.
Anyway, as we watched the show, there is a contestant, a tall man. He has a beard.
And a sweet face.
And a an adorable face. And as you glanced at the screen, you said, "Is that gay?" And I said to you, "His baking mitts are bear claws." So you figure that out.
Make of that what you will.
For yourself. Yeah. Anyway, Gary's question while we were watching the show was, how many friends in common do I have with him on Facebook? I said, I don't know. Let's both check. He had like one or two.
Uh-huh.
I had three.
Well then.
Yeah. He's safe, by the way. He didn't get kicked off.
Yes. He got very nice feedback from Mary Berry, the judge.
He did, except his brandy snaps, the cream was a little watery.
Oh, really?
And the cream started, the watery bit started seeping out.
And sogging the cookie.
And sogging up everything, yeah. So the brandy snap cookie themselves
were well constructed.
Were well constructed.
But the cream was
all the same size. They didn't look too handled.
Yeah.
There's such a thing as when you're baking, if things look too handled.
Too home sewn.
Well, you know, they make these gingerbread houses at the end. That's their big thing at the end. And one of those gingerbread houses that comes out looks like the woman dunked her hand in some dirt and just touched everything. And I was like, you know what? That's not good. That is a bad looking gingerbread. That's not good. Then Grace, who got kicked off, I gotta admit, I'm a little sad to see Grace go after one episode because
was she Gingerbread Hospital?
She's Gingerbread Hospital.
Oh, brother! Christmas,
she's a nurse and she works in a hospital.
Yes,
and so her gingerbread house challenge was: I'm going to make a gingerbread hospital.
Next, she'll give us a gingerbread hospice.
Who makes? Yeah, who decides in their head? I love my job. I know what she was thinking. I love my job as a nurse. This hospital means a lot to me.
I want to take this to work. Everybody's going to love it.
Everyone's going to love it. But in real life, nobody wants a gingerbread hospital because it makes you think of your health insurance premiums, which are either way too much and kill you every month. Thanks, Kaiser Permanente. Or
death.
Or you don't have health insurance, so the hospital just fills you with anxiety anyway, because you're like, oh God, I'm going to get sick and then I'm going to go bankrupt. Here's another way that the Great British Baking Show is not like this American version.
Uh-huh.
They've got the National Health Service in England.
That's true.
And so they don't have to worry about...
Their gingerbread hospital would be uplifting.
They don't have to worry about that stuff. Yeah. So she makes this kind of janky looking gingerbread hospital. And I'm thinking, first of all, conceptually, you're all wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe unless, like
for the Halloween episode.
Unless you make little like gumdrop urine specimen cups.
Jello shots.
Yeah. Here are my little urine specimen cups. I made them with gumdrops.
I made a candy striper out of real candy.
They're tasty. Taste the urine specimen cups. And hers looked like it had been handled too. Mm. And she used those gross Andes peppermint chocolates that you get at bad restaurants.
Those are not gross. I love those.
You like those?
Oh yeah.
I think they're terrible.
Oh, they're so good.
Sorry, Andes.
I always grab a big handful whenever we leave Eat a Cho. They have them in a bowl on the counter.
Sorry, Andes peppermint chocolates, but I don't like you at all.
Ooh, yum. No, yeah. They're really good. The one I was aghast at, I saw a bit of this, was the couple who had that the where the walls of the house weren't even meeting, and they didn't even cover it with like frosting to sort of, you know, make it look.
No, no. She fixed it.
Oh, she. Okay.
That's not a couple. That wasn't a couple.
Oh, okay.
They were just people looking at it.
Oh, all right. Well, that was a mess. And then on the roof, they had those sugar coated, like, they're not even gumdrops. They're like jellies or whatever.
I love those.
See, yeah, I'm not down. No, you can have the fruit
shaped jelly things.
Well, they weren't fruit shaped. They were all the same sort of like dots. But they're like dots, but they're covered in like frosty sugar. Anyway, not my thing.
My favorite moment of everything, though, was watching Mary Berry give the stank face to the idea of A cookie dough that you buy in a log at the grocery store and that you just chop up.
Right.
And it doesn't even make it into the oven. You just eat it. And she had this look on her face like, oh my. And it was pretty great.
What does Mary Berry eat when she gets depressed?
You know.
Profiteroles.
A lovely chocolate biscuit from some high-end purveyor, no doubt.
Or an entire this case woman of is hobnobs.
This woman is she's 80 years old. All she's right. An 80-year-old English food writer.
Well, sometimes.
And television presenter.
Sometimes you get in a funk and there's nothing like the log of cookie dough to tide you over until the world seems like a better place.
Every time I have eaten raw cookie dough, the Pillsbury raw cookie mm-hmm. dough, bad things have happened to
well,
me.
Well, that's on you.
Yeah. So I can't recommend it
all right.
as a practice.
Speaking of which...
It's delicious.
Speaking of which, next Tuesday...
Yes.
I get the tub of cookie dough that we got from my co-worker's kids'
sale. And who makes
sale.
This? Who makes
it's
this?
Like, it's like Southern Living brand or something.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, we're not going to serve these to people.
No, no. It'll just be for us.
Because I can't... You know, I got a rep.
I understand that.
Yeah.
This is the Christmas we need to get a melon baller for cookie dough.
All right. Why don't...
So they come out even.
Here's what I'll do in the morning when I go by the... I'm going to the farmer's market tomorrow to get a pork butt.
Yes.
If the restaurant store is open, I'll get a melon baller.
Cool.
So that we can have adequate cookie dough...
consistency.
Shapes, yeah.
Nice.
I cannot wait to make that pork butt tomorrow.
I can't wait for you to make that pork butt either. It's going to be great. And I've
been thinking about it all day. Like, all I think is, like, I wish it were tomorrow so I could be making the pork butt.
This is the Christmas that I'm going to make those chocolate chip oatmeal cookies.
Okay.
With the walnuts.
Go ahead and do it. Why don't you make them for the Christmas party?
Maybe. If I can get I've got to do the chili, obviously.
You're going to have time.
If I have time, I'll do that,
You're
too.
You're a very busy man these
I'm
days.
I'm so busy.
It's going to be a thing that you can do.
I know. It's like, you know, that I have not watched Jessica Jones yet because I've just been
No, I know. Well, I'm going to watch that
calendar.
With you. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm done with Supergirl, but I'm ready for this thing because everyone tells me that if you're fed up with superheroes,
yeah.
this is the one that you watch.
My peers yeah. over at What the Flick are covering it. So far, they've done episodes 1 through 3, and Bibbs and Meredith and Kim and Francis all took a look at it. So if you are dying to know about what's going on with that show or you've seen it and you want to hear some other, you know, points of view, go check them out. But I was not able to sit in on it because I'm like, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm totally gonna. I was trying to get Dave to read the comic book years ago, but he's too cool for that.
So. I was not too cool for it. I'm just very, I'm too, I'm very busy.
Yes, yes.
I just didn't ever, I never got around to it.
All right.
Maybe if I love the show a lot, I'll go back and read those comic books.
Maybe.
I know. We still have them.
We do.
So, there.
Although, I'm sure the show I hear is actually a pretty faithful adaptation, so you may not need to read the comics. Yeah. But.
One more thing about cooking.
Yes.
I have Nigella Lawson auto-record in the DVR.
Right.
So, she's been over here plugging her book. She's got a new book. It's called Simply Nigella.
She had a signing in Los Angeles while we were out of town.
While we were in Napa. Yeah. Well, but you know what? I don't need it. I don't need it signed because... Of the wonderful thing you did many years ago for me. One of her books came out around Christmas time, and you went to the Williams-Sonoma in, like, Pasadena or yeah. somewhere, and you stood in line, and you stood in line, and you stood in line, and you got her to sign the copy of it for me. And even though they told you no special messages, don't ask her for anything special, you boldly said, "Will you please sign it to the King of Pancakes?" And she did.
And she did.
So, you're great. She's great. Anyway, she has a new book out called Simply Nigella. Mm-hmm. There's also a new cooking show called Simply Nigella that's already aired in England, yes. but not here yet.
You lucky Brits have already enjoyed
well,
it.
You know, I went to the BBC site and I was trying to stream it, but they're mm-hmm. like, no, you can't.
You are outside of the...
You're outside of the streaming zone.
Yeah, it's like when
the internet is not for the world. No, it's for just one country.
It's like when I post something from Hulu on Facebook, and inevitably one of my grumpier Canadians will be like, "You can't watch it." Sorry,
your fault.
I know. Yes, I personally.
So yeah, England people, what's up? Why do you hate me? Okay, so anyway, she's on all these cooking shows, and she will go anywhere to promote this book. Terrible talk shows that I've never heard of before. There she is, making something.
Like the ones you'd see on The Soup?
Yeah. She, apparently, she doesn't care if there are people in the world who have her auto-recorded in TiVo, because she's wearing the exact same red flannel shirt, sort of a man's, kind of a lumberjacky kind of shirt. Yeah,
with like kind of Western buttons. Yeah.
She's wearing the exact same red flannel shirt on every single show.
She's keeping it Simply Not Jello.
Including, this is my favorite one, including the Chrissy Teigen show. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Who's Chrissy Teigen? You keep mentioning her like I'm supposed to know who she is.
A model and spokesperson for things.
Oh.
She's either married or not to John Legend.
Oh.
She's very pretty.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's enough to get you a show now.
I don't know what she did before. She might have been a model of some renown.
Okay.
Before John Legend came into her life.
I see.
But I didn't know her. I've only ever known her as John Legend's
adjacent
woman. Mm. And so
lady friend.
Right. She's in TV ads for like phones and things.
I see.
Yeah, she's real cute.
Okay, so Nigella anyway, is plying her trade.
Chrissy Teigen's show, and everyone on the Chrissy Teigen panel is all dressed all nicely and just sort of flashy for a show. Here comes Nigella in the flannel shirt. I'm just gonna get flour all over myself now. It doesn't matter.
I don't know about you people. I'm here to cook.
Right. So. So yeah, that's it. I've just been really entertained by watching the flannel shirt bounce from show to show to show. It's like she shot them all in one day. And she just showed up and she's like, "I'm here, I'm dressed.
Yeah.
Let me go. I have no time for this. One take, we're done."
What you see is what you get.
Yeah.
All right, we're close to an hour, so do we have time to
let's talk about the three Christmas episodes of things we watched.
Okay.
Because we gotta keep this is our project.
Yes.
Our project is watch Christmas episodes and old specials.
And people are sending us more to look at. It's like, hey, we'll try, but you know.
So we watched an episode of Roseanne.
Yes.
Called White Trash Christmas, mm-hmm. which apparently you cannot say white trash anymore. That's what I'm being told.
I think I'd heard that.
Because of the class.
It's classist.
It's classist. Yeah. Now. You and I, as gays, mm-hmm. we get to use that special F word that we like to say so much.
That's true.
Now, you, as a person who grew up in a nice house.
Yes.
With a maid.
Yeah.
And a country club membership.
You make it sound like a bigger deal than it is, but go on.
Come on.
It was not.
Let's not be fake now.
It wasn't a very good country.
It was. It was one of the lesser.
When we would have swim meets against other country clubs, I felt embarrassed. Because theirs seemed much nicer.
I'm embarrassed by my country club is shoddy. Oh, God. How will I stand the humiliation? My country club is not up to snuff for my swim meet.
I'm just saying, there are better ones and worse ones, and ours was not one of the better ones.
Next week on Ordinary People. We'll discuss the brother who drowned in this boating accident.
We were near the airport, is all I'm saying.
Anyway.
I know where you're going with
this. Let's just say that my childhood was of a different socioeconomic
yes,
status.
Yes.
All right. one that I grew up calling white trash. And white people all around the... White trash, actual white trash people, like me, have always very comfortably said white trash. And I believe I still should be allowed to say it.
All right. You're taking ownership of it because, yes. Because
them's my kin.
You put in time in a trailer park.
I did.
I'm not speaking and figuratively
many, and
here.
And many other garbagey dwellings.
Right.
rented garbagey places.
Cinder block apartments.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to say is you never get to say white.
All right.
Because understood. You are the oppressor.
My parents were immigrants.
And I...
who made good.
You're the oppressor. I'm the downtrodden.
They're fine.
Anyway, so we watch Roseanne. I love Roseanne. Boy, do I love that show. I can watch old episodes of Roseanne. It doesn't matter when it's on, if there's a Roseanne marathon going on and I'm feeling especially lazy, I can just sit on the couch and watch Roseanne episode after Roseanne episode.
When I watch Roseanne, I like it.
Yeah.
But I've never gone out of my way to watch
it. No, I don't put it in the TiVo, but it, you know, sometimes you're
no,
just
but even when it was new,
around
like,
live TV.
Sure, sure.
Oh, I watched it
when it was new,
regularly.
I very rarely watched
it. I watched it all the time when it was on, yeah. So this was the Christmas episode where they tried to become the tackiest. It's the Pink Flamingos episode where they try to become the tackiest Christmas...
Family on the block.
Family on the block. Unfortunately, that's it's the B story.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure what the A story was.
The A story was the boy. What's the boy's name?
Oh, DJ.
DJ has to go to Chicago with his grandmother and they run into Darlene's apartment, her crappy apartment with...
David.
With, from what's that show?
Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, him. And so...
Johnny Galecki.
And so that part of the episode was actually not all that interesting. I was really more concerned with the Christmas decoration.
Yeah, I was also not very interested in Becky wanting to go work at a Hooters-type restaurant to put her boyfriend through mechanic school.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, could we have more of the plastic Liberace stand-ups and stuff?
I learned a terrible... truth about
you're just bringing everybody down today.
The actor named Glenn Quinn, who played Becky's husband Mark, he died in 2002 of a heroin overdose.
You are full of the tidings of the season.
I know. So that was a good episode.
Yeah, well,
not very good.
Not
that was a lesser Roseanne episode.
It was
and
not,
I'm a big fan.
It when it ended, it felt like it just sort of stopped.
Yeah, it just sort of peters out. Like they don't even have a resolution to most of any of it.
Yeah.
Then you and I watched the 1974 Perry Como Christmas Show.
Yes, one of the great Get TV specials. We had Jeff Myers from Get TV, who's one of he's like a VP at Sony Television, came to the Christmas show that I did with Frank DiCaro this week for Outfest, and he showed some clips from Perry Como and Mitzi Gaynor and Andy Williams and stuff, and he was talking about how a lot of those Christmas specials, they aren't owned by any companies, like the families own them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the star, you know, whoever produced them kind of has them. And so it's a lot of sort of digging into people's, you know, like the box in the garage or wherever they're sort of storing old tapes or whatever.
Wow.
Because, yeah, you know, because usually
but
when
Get TV gets one, do they get to keep it?
I imagine. I'm sure they like work out
a deal.
Yeah, they get many years worth of rights or whatever. But yeah, it generally kind of boils down to a lot of this stuff just sort of being the Christmas episode of their show.
Right.
You know, like that Happy Holidays with Frank and Bing thing.
Yes.
Was the Christmas episode of the Frank Sinatra Show.
Yeah.
Who knew that was a Frank Sinatra show?
I did not.
I didn't.
Boy, do I love that episode, though.
Oh, it's so good.
They put that specifically by itself out on a DVD.
Yeah. Well, it was amazing because...
Now we watch it every year.
Every year. Well, there was like a crappy black and white version of it floating around for ages. And then Tina Sinatra found a 35mm print of it in the vault. And so we saw it the year they premiered it at the Paley Center in Beverly Hills. And then the next year they put it out on DVD and it's become a staple. And it's where Sinatra introduced the song Mistletoe and Holly.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, at the very beginning of the show, he says, like, here's a new one. When he's talking, after he's mentioned Chesterfield cigarettes and Bulova watches, he's trimming the tree.
Perry Como's special,
oh yeah,
by contrast, involves old-timey impressionist Rich Little.
Yes.
If you're young, you're going to have to go Google him.
He's still alive.
He is still alive.
You might remember him for playing Johnny Carson in the HBO movie of The Late Shift.
Johnny Carson was a TV host of The Tonight Show before Jay Leno.
Yes.
Rich Little comes along in a Santa costume doing a Jack Benny impersonation.
Right.
Making jokes about 1974 inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then
he does a Raymond Burr Perry Mason impersonation.
Yeah, he does. At the end of the episode, Perry tells the Christmas story.
All Bible-y and stuff.
He takes a long time.
Perry Como was, you know,
telling the Christmas story.
He would take his time in a song.
Perry takes his time talking. And, oh, look, your phone's buzzing.
Not anymore.
You're the one making the noise.
Oh, fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, people always tell me that I talk slowly and I leave a lot of...
You cram in too many details.
Pauses. Perry did this on recorded television.
Where they had editors.
Yeah. It is...
So next time you're telling a story and it's taking forever, I'm just going to say Perry Como in Bethlehem.
No, you're not, because I'm... master of my own speechifying.
Well, great. I'm going to be like the bunny in that Disney trailer, and you're going to be the sloth at the DMV.
What's that movie?
I can't remember.
It's coming out.
It's Zootopia?
Is that what it's called?
I think so. I saw that trailer again today when I went to see Krampus.
It is a biblical story.
Mm-hmm.
It is laborious.
Yes.
And simultaneously groovy.
And acted out by white people, children.
All of them white. Deadly dull.
Yeah.
Here is when the Perry Como Christmas show comes alive. Karen Carpenter.
Yes.
The Carpenters show up. They sing Santa Claus is Coming to Town in their own very special Carpenters arrangement kind of way.
Yeah, that.
Ba-da-da, yeah. It's ba-da-da. Fantastic. And then...
Peggy Fleming comes out and skates for a while.
Peggy Fleming comes out and skates for a while. Peggy Fleming was an old-timey ice skater person of the Olympics.
I was like, she was a gold medalist.
Yeah. Then Karen comes out and sings a medley of her songs and Perry Como's songs where they take turns singing each other's songs. So there are two moments in the Perry Como Christmas show that are alive.
Yeah.
And those are both involving Karen Carpenter.
Who is not.
Who is no longer, sadly, alive.
But, Perry.
That stuff is not interesting.
And I like his Christmas songs. Like, his versions of There's No Place Like Home for the Holidays and It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas, I think, are a lot of fun. But, boy, yeah, this special is a drag.
All right.
But it is done in that weird, like, what were you talking about? The sort of early 70s color palette of Victorian England.
This sort of, well, it's like everyone is obsessed with Victorian England as the signifier of
the
Christmas. The
Dickens-y brand Christmas.
But the colors of the costumes are this, like, this Peter Max psychedelic
purples and pinks and greens
and electric orange. And
yeah. Andy Williams does the same thing on his specials.
But he does it amazingly.
And is it a little more pastel? And the Andy Williams Christmas, Get TV is airing not only actual Andy Williams Christmas specials, but also like a retrospective special about Andy Williams' Christmas specials. And they're all worth watching.
Right. Anyway, the last thing we watched was a Golden Girls Christmas episode. I can't remember which one it was in terms of title, but it was someone's knocking at the door.
Be right back. If the podcast suddenly smells pinier, it's because we just had our wreath delivered. My sister sends us one every year.
She sends us a real wreath every year for our door. It smells amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's the Golden Girls episode where
they go spend the day in a homeless shelter feeding people.
Right, and Dorothy's ex-husband shows up.
Yeah, and that element of the show is
awkward,
preachy, and weird and awkward.
Yeah,
you know, oh, these poor people! Isn't it great that we're here helping them? Haven't we learned things about life now?
I think the line "someone should do something" is uttered like twice. It's kind of like, yeah, someone should.
Socially conscious sitcoms of the '80s.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is now the fourth Golden Girls episode that I have ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
Back when it aired in the '80s. And I watched it resentfully on Saturday nights when I had nothing better to do,
right.
No other plans, all my friends were busy, or I was broke. And I was stuck at home watching the Golden Girls because there was nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if it was funny or not then because I was just so angry that I was stuck being an old person when I was 19 or 20 years old.
Right. What's your take now?
That show's funny.
They're funny.
That show is funny. They're funny.
I don't know that the writing is funny.
Some of the writing is funny, but they are funny. Well, those four women are funny together.
They have real chemistry. Like, and
I might not, you know, ignore it forever. Like I have been doing for the past 25 years.
My thing with Golden Girls, I never really watched it either. But for me, it's because I kind of feel like This was after their best, you know? Like, for me, when I think of Bea Arthur and Rue McClanahan, I think of Maude. And when I think of Betty White, I think of Mary Tyler Moore Show. And for me personally, they're so indelible from those shows that watching them in anything else just kind of feels like, oh yeah, and then they did this.
Right.
And now I know there's a whole ton of people who grew up watching them on this show and may have only scant knowledge of Maude and Mary Tyler Moore, or may have caught up with them later.
Yes.
And that's just how things go sometimes. And, you know, more power to you. I get it. I don't resent anyone who liking the Golden Girls or think that it's dumb. I understand what the appeal is and why they like it. You know, as you've pointed out, we know people who've written books on the subject. You know, we know super fans of the show.
Yes.
I'm just not one of them.
I might give it another whirl. Right. Those women are funny to me.
I think also what I don't like about it is it's one of those shows that was shot on video as opposed to on film.
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
It's so garish to look at, and I find the laugh track oppressive.
They always are.
But even...
Laugh tracks are always a pain.
They're always a pain, yeah. But I think there are some that are pitched a little louder than other ones.
Probably.
Like, I bet if you put this one side by side with Maude, which actually Maude was also shot on video, but in a less shrill Florida color palette. anyway, I think the Golden Girls would maybe be louder by comparison.
Before we read the letters, I have a new favorite TV commercial.
Oh, good.
It's the Aveeno commercial with Jennifer Aniston. Here's why. You know that woman does not use Aveeno.
Nor does she.
Jennifer Aniston does not use a moisturizer
that you can get at CVS.
At the CVS,
she's got like La Mer by the barrel.
Furthermore, they show her
making a smoothie,
and I was like, "You don't even make your own smoothies. You don't seem to be knowing how to make a smoothie in this commercial." And as she's talking about, you know, oh, your hands, you know, while you're. You want soft hands while you're making smoothies, don't you? And I was like, your personal chef is making your smoothie. He's got three blueberries next to the blender. That's not enough blueberries for the smoothie. Get it together, Jennifer Aniston.
I know. Well, she's trying. Bless her heart.
Y'all go watch that commercial with Jennifer Aniston.
It's
real dumb.
My pick this week. I'm going to pick over the next couple of weeks some of my favorite made-for-TV Christmas movies. I put a handful of them in the book. You know, heaven knows, if you want the full skinny on the Hallmark and Lifetime movies, go listen to the B Movies podcast, because Bibbs, every week, because he's been recovering from knee surgery,
working it out.
He's seen like Hallmark four movies. Or five of these a week, and he really goes into detail and explains what works and what doesn't. And
I I just applaud that man.
It's a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend The Gathering.
Okay.
Which still chokes me up after all these years.
Right.
Stars Ed Asner and Maureen Stapleton.
Sexy, sexy Ed Asner.
and their children include Gregory Harrison is one of them, and I forget who. Yeah. It's a really good cast. Gail Strickland, who I kind of knew in Dallas, actually. She's an actress.
Who oh, really?
Now. Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, it's a... In the very first scene, Ed Asner finds out that he is dying.
Uh-huh.
And will die in the new year.
Yes.
And so he decides that he wants to have one last Christmas with his family around him.
Right.
Which is tricky to pull off because he has divorced his wife and his children, except for one of his daughters, are estranged from him.
Yes.
And so it's all about him trying to, like, make this happen and get them together and mend his fences and, you know... All the one of those things that you want out of a Christmas movie, the whole idea of like broken family ties being restored.
Yes.
And Maureen Stapleton knows
so he, fiction.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But aspirational, and it makes people feel good.
Yes.
And so Maureen Stapleton knows that he's dying, but none of the kids know.
Right.
So the movie isn't morose, and it's not like, oh, we're, there's it's not like the vultures are circling. Like it's he has to get his family back on the merits and not by playing the I'm going to be dead soon card. Right. It's so beautiful and so moving and funny at times. Directed by Randall Kleiser.
Yeah.
Right during his, like, you know, he was really... It was after Boy in the Plastic Bubble and before Grease.
Yeah.
He was hot, hot, hot.
Yeah.
And it's just great. And Warner Archive, I think, did like a digital remaster a couple years ago. You can get on DVD. So if you've never seen The Gathering before, it's a really great Christmas movie and a wonderful little tearjerker.
Okay, two letters.
Okay.
One very long letter from listener and friend Rick Andreoli.
Yes.
Hey, boys. So great hearing both the podcasts. They make my daily commute so much easier. I said this on Twitter, but please keep Alonzo's gleeful TV shouts during the LKTV opening. It makes me laugh every time, even more so when I hear Dave grumbling about it. I want to support Alonzo with his Mr. Robot Rebellion.
Whoa! Yay!
I've heard the show is great as well, but there is nothing that bugs and tugs on my big nerve more than people telling me that I have... H-A-V-E, capital letters, to watch something or do something or agree with them about something. They say it as though you are missing out on the most vital aspect of pop culture to ever hit the television airwaves since the Five Doctors episode of Doctor Who back in 1983. and perhaps because I was raised Catholic, there's also a slight sense of guilt I feel for missing out on Mr. Robot from the beginning. No, thank you. I don't need to feel guilty or pressured into watching TV. People need to realize that the more they tell someone they must do something, as though you don't have a job, a social life, or any other interests, the more that turns people off from their recommendations.
That's all I'm saying. I have no actual opinion about Mr. Robot because I haven't watched it, but it's I find the cheerleading for it oppressive after a while.
That said, the same thing happened when Ugly Betty first came on the air, and when Steve and I, his husband, and I did binge-watch the first season, we were converted. How could you, though? She's so ugly.
She's so ugly.
Sorry.
It's a running joke.
A dumb running joke in this house.
The point being that she's not.
So there is something to be said for Alonzo and me trying out Mr. Robot in the future. It will be on our terms.
Yeah.
Not because some random dude is forcing it on us.
Hear, hear, Andreoli.
As for you, Dave, I know your love for cooking shows, and we have found the most insane homemaker cook on KVCR, the PBS station here in Los Angeles. Her name is Marianne Redini Spencer. And her Simply Delicious Living segments run before Martha Stewart's Cooking School or Martha Bakes or A Chef's Life. Never consistently. She looks like the perfect homemaker next door, but she is frantic and crazy. She sometimes loses bites of food from her mouth when she tastes her recipes. And her dishes are so not food styled. It looks like she's really your medicated next door neighbor who turned on the camera and shot some YouTube videos for college kids to watch while stoned. I think her husband pays for her placement on PBS. I gotta see this now.
I would say you TiVo Martha's Cooking Academy.
I do. I TiVo
and Martha Bakes.
Martha's Cooking School and Martha Bakes. Needless to say, we love her, preferably if we have a glass of wine while watching, and seeing her right before the perfection of Martha Stewart is delicious. You can check out some of her segments on her YouTube channel.
Oh, yay.
Simply Delish Living. I'll go look at that.
Okay.
That's it for now. Love you guys. Even though Steve and I don't get to see you very much, hearing you twice a week makes me feel all warm and fuzzy. Rick.
Oh, thanks.
Rick!
Rick.
A short letter from listener Garrison. Dear Alonzo and Dave, you might as well stop with LKTV now.
Oh?
Because I find it terribly difficult to imagine anything more wonderful than Dave's impersonation of Courtney Thorne Smith. Courtney Thorne Smith speaking about her love of bread with a mouthful of bread. Truly magnificent. Garrison.
Well, thank you, Garrison. That was a special moment.
It was a moment for me that I would have forgotten if you had not reminded me that it happened. Okay, we're done.
All righty.
You gotta go see Hateful Eight.
I do, in 70mm.
And I gotta sit home and not do that.
So, enjoy these while you can, and in the meantime, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com, B-Movies Podcast, The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Rotten Tomatoes, etc., etc., etc. Leave us a review on iTunes, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast. We're linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's where you can PayPal us for the extra episodes. If you want to buy my Christmas movie book for $20, you can PayPal us there for that. More if it's outside of the U.S. You can go to exileandguyvillebook.tumblr.com to order Dave's audiobook of Exile and Guyville and pay what you want. And we'll be back later this week with our regular Linoleum Knife show, so we hope you'll be back for that as well. Sorry we were a little late this week, but...
I'm not sorry.
Okay, fine.
No apologies.
I'm acknowledging that we were a little late this week.
I'm not sorry.
Deal with it. All right, thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.